Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Before we begin, let's hear a quick message from our sponsor.
Hello, HR. It's me, your HR data. And I need to apologize. I'm sorry for being all over the place. I'm sorry for being difficult. I'm sorry for not being there for you. But it's not my fault. You put me in different HR systems and messy spreadsheets. But guess what? I now have a new friend, and their name is Employee Cycle. They can put all of me in one HR dashboard for you and keep me updated and simple so we'll better understand each other. Look, we're smarter when we're working together, so if you want me to show you my full potential, please go to employeecycle.com to get your free demo today. That's employeecycle.com. Promise me you'll go. Our relationship depends on it.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle HR Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable. And today, we're going to chat with the HR director of Energage, formerly known as Workplace Dynamics, about how to measure employee engagement. Please welcome Lisa Sordilia to the podcast. Woo! Yay, Lisa!
Thank you. It's quite a welcome.
I know how busy HR professionals and executives can be. So taking any time from open enrollment or benefits or any of the other 1,000 recruiting, hiring, keeping your employees engaged to talk to me is an honor. So I appreciate that.
Thanks. It's an honor to speak to you as well.
So Lisa, before we get started on this very important topic, can you please give the listener some background and context into how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Absolutely. So I actually got a degree in sociology and psychology. So probably like many other HR professionals, just interested in people and how we all kind of interact. And I really set out to work in social work. And so my first career was in social work. And the reason I wanted to do that was just I wanted to be able to help people. And I had met someone that did that was a social worker when I was younger. And it just kind of inspired me to find a career where I was able to help people. And so after 5 years of social work, I just wanted to have a change from, you know, I was working with people who were physically disabled and at risk of nursing home placement, but were young. They were between the ages of 18 and 59. You know, it was really sad and I lost a lot of clients. It just really kind of emotionally takes a toll on you. And I decided to make a career change. And so I ended up getting into HR through recruiting. I've loved it ever since. So I started in recruiting and then I got into HR, the HR side. I was working at Quicken Loans. So that was really my first taste of a company with a really amazing culture. Decided that HR would be a really great fit for me and been doing it ever since for a long time.
And just to give the listener some background info on Energage, can you let us know what your company does?
Absolutely. So Energage, formerly known as Workplace Dynamics, has been around for about 11 years, and we are in the employee engagement space. And so how we've built our business is through the Top Workplaces program. And what that means for us is that we go in and we survey employees who work at companies, and we get a lot of information from them on how they feel about working their company. And we take that information and we help the companies try to understand it, but more importantly, be able to take actions that will help improve the experience that their employees have at their company.
So similar to the barber that people will always look at their hair to make sure that it's done, or similar to the dentist to make sure that the dentist's teeth are straight. Because you don't want to go to a dentist with jacked up teeth. Does that put additional pressure on you to be the HR director at a company that provides like employee engagement services?
So I don't look at it as pressure. I look at it as alignment with the senior leaders because they know the importance of it. And so they are already bought in, which in my HR experience at other companies, that can sometimes be half, more than half the battle. So, but yes, it is absolutely something that we believe we need to, we call it eat our own ice cream. And so we do need to create a workplace where employees are engaged and they have meaningful work and great relationships with, you know, their manager and their coworkers. And so, yeah, there's, I wouldn't call it pressure, but there is definitely an expectation.
Eat your own ice cream is so much better than the saying, eat your own dog food.
I know, right?
I don't know who wants to eat dog food. And I don't know where that crazy saying came from.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I spent some time in the pet industry, and we didn't use that expression there either. But yeah, I think eating your own ice cream is good. And so we have some fun with it. If we go through a rough patch, we might say that we're eating Rocky Road. Or, you know, we're eating Superman if things are going well. So
yeah. Nice. I like that. So our topic for today is how to measure employee engagement. And one of the things that I think we should start off with is really talking about what is employee engagement? What does that look like? On a previous podcast, we spoke about engagement not being ping pong tables in the office or not being water slides at the office. So what is employee engagement to set the baseline for what we're talking about today?
Sure. So in all of the research that we've done, and I didn't share this earlier, but in those 11 years, we've surveyed over 14 million people who work at 50,000 different companies. So we have over 400 million data points. So what we have determined is that employee engagement is really a journey, and it's not a destination where you say, oh, we've reached employee engagement. Now we're just going to sit back and the ping pong table is enough to keep employees engaged. So it is really a journey. And I think the most important thing is that there are different stages that companies go through on this journey, and to continue to recognize where you are and to take steps to improve that, and know that it is a continuous journey. But the simple definition of employee engagement is when you're really hitting the sweet spot where the employee is engaged because they really love what they do. And so they're extending that extra effort.
And with employee engagement, is that the same thing as motivation, or is engagement and motivation two different things?
Motivation is one of the factors. It's actually one of the factors that we measure. And, you know, in our survey, one of the questions that we ask is, you know, my company motivates me to give my very, very best. So that is a part of it. And again, kind of getting to that sweet spot where the employee is really motivated internally, because they know that if they give their best, the company cares about them. There's also a connection to the work that they do being meaningful. And, you know, that kind of adds to their overall well-being.
And with organizations having so many different types of employees, whether you have, I mean, we know that a lot of companies are not that diverse, but assuming that there's at least some diversity there, diversity by ethnicity, diversity by sexual orientation, the list goes on and on and on, or even just diversity of interest. Some people are really outdoorsy people. Other people are really into cooking or sci-fi movies or whatever it is. How do you engage a totally different group of people the same way that you engage another group? Or is that what you should do? And should you engage people differently? And if so, how do you do that?
Yeah, so there's a couple things with that. And the first thing that we say is, you know, it starts with recruiting, and you go out looking for employees, and then people show up. So kind of beneath the surface of people, there are all these different layers of the people and all the interests that they have outside of work and, you know, family and activities. And So there's so much more to the person. And so one of the ways that we try to tap into that is by getting to know the people on a more personal level. And although it's kind of ironic because at different times in my HR career, you know, you kind of advise managers to not go below the surface. But there is a way to do that where you can tap into what that employee really wants. And so for us, one of the ways we do that is through our catalytic coaching. So it's a replacement for the traditional performance management process. And it starts with really putting the employee at the center of the conversation. And it changes the role of the manager to a coach. So the first step in that is really just listening and learning about that person.
Interesting. We now understand what employee engagement is, and we learned a little bit about how we can actually engage different types of people in an organization. So back to the topic of measuring employee engagement, how do you do that? Because it seems to be one of the squishiest, most subjective areas of HR. And as HR is clawing and scratching to become more data-driven, how do you make this a data-supported and data-driven function of HR?
So this is where the eating our own ice cream actually works out quite well for us, because we do have the tools to measure engagement through. We start with the survey. That's an in-depth survey that we do. And how we do it here is we did that at the beginning of this year. And from there, we figured out what are the focus areas where we want to improve. And then we started with using another product that we have, which is called Connect, which is a two-way communication tool. Like the survey, it's anonymous, so people really open up. And we pulse out questions specific to those focus areas. So for example, if we identified that people can be frustrated because departments don't communicate well with each other, we can ask specific questions around that focus area and start to see the improvement in that area. So that's what we do, is we measure it through our survey, and then we identify those focus areas where we want to improve, and then we work towards improving that.
Can you give a little bit more context and clarity around the types of questions that are being asked on this survey? And are they the same questions being asked every time?
So the annual survey would be typically be the same questions that are asked. And then when you get into the pulse survey, and this could really be customized for each organization. I just used an example from Energage. The focus area questions will be determined by the areas that the company maybe didn't. They had some comments or indication that they really needed to dig into that area a little more.
And for those listeners who may not be aware of or understand what a pulse survey is, can you describe the difference between a pulse survey versus an annual survey?
Sure. It's a very lightweight survey. And again, I'm very fortunate because I have a team of really, really intelligent people who know a lot about how to ask questions without, you know, creating bias. And so they help us formulate the questions in those focus areas. And so when we send out those pulse surveys, the employees can respond, they can rate how they're feeling, but they can also provide comments. And when they provide those comments, what I can do as the champion is I can actually have an anonymous chat with them, and I can say, can you tell me more about this? And I'm sorry that you feel that way. And what you're doing through that interaction is you're listening. And a lot of times people just want to be heard. So you're creating trust with that person, and you still don't know who they are. So my goal is to usually just to keep the dialogue going and to be able to ask them questions. And that's different than the annual survey, where you get the data, but it's really more of that snapshot from that one point in time.
So one of the things that we try to do very well for our listeners is to make sure that they leave our episode or leave our podcast with a framework mm-hmm. of how to actually execute and implement and use data to measure whatever the topic we're talking mm-hmm. about. And so from the very beginning, how can you help an HR person walk through the process of getting started with this? And let's start with getting buy-in. How should they be presenting why we need our employees to be better engaged? And how are they communicating and expressing the ROI of what more engaged employees will look like and how they will benefit the company?
Yes.
Because you could just say, oh yeah, we'll make more money. But is that necessarily true?
So the answer to that is that it will be specific to that organization. And so some examples might be employee turnover, or if there's a departmental issue with whether, you know, you can identify issues with managers. So it starts a little bit with that organization and kind of having a conversation to understand a little bit more about what's going on there. And that's where the annual survey can come in to really just give a snapshot. But if you're dealing with leadership who isn't bought into it at all and doesn't want anything to do with a survey, you're going to have to get data from other people and be able to show that, you know, they were able to reduce their turnover by, you know, 10%, or to be able to show that you can increase the amount of employee referrals that you get because people feel proud to work at your organization and are likely to refer their friends and family. So those are some of the things that you can connect back to an actual cost to the company. So those are a couple of examples.
For some of the listeners out there who may be working at a very small company, let's just say less than 20 employees, or maybe even less than 10, how soon do you think measuring engagement and using surveys should happen? I mean, should it happen with just a handful of people? Should you wait until it's 20, 50, 100 employees? What does that look like?
So the kind of the guideline in terms of the anonymity factor is, you know, 50 people. Because if you have less than that, then you may not be getting really honest and true feedback just because people are afraid that they're going to be identified. So, but that's not to say that a company of less than 50 people can't benefit from it. It's just that they have to realize that people might still be holding back. So they have to maybe find other ways that they can build trust. And so one example of how we build trust here is our Connect tool also has a feature for providing anonymous suggestions. And as soon as we get a suggestion that is a great idea, we've actually had a lot of great suggestions that we've implemented, then we share that out with everyone. So you start building that trust through transparency and letting them know that their ideas are important and that you are listening.
Great. So let's just assume that I'm the HR listener who has now been able to get buy-in. Where do I start? Assuming there's two scenarios. One, I can try to build these surveys myself, or two, I can work with a company like Energage. Either way, how do I start?
So without sounding like a sales pitch, I would connect with someone who is an expert in this matter and really have a conversation to identify the next steps for them. Because again, it's really, there's not a one size fits all approach. So I think the first step is to have a conversation and start to define, you know, think about what it is that you want to achieve from this, you know, begin with the end in mind.
So that's interesting. So as the HR professional, I should already know what goal I want to achieve before I implement the survey. But are there any reasons that I should believe that the surveys will actually help me identify where my biggest problems are?
They will help you identify where your problems are. And I guess to go back to my original statement, it didn't mean that you had to have it all figured out before the survey. So just, but if you think about it from that approach, where do you want to go with it so that you don't get lost in the weeds? Because when you do a survey, you do get a lot of information and a lot of data back. So I just meant more to keep it, to keep that in mind as you go through this process.
Okay, great. So I'm ready to put this survey out there and get all this data back to really understand where my workforce is in regards to engagement. Should I do this company-wide? If this is my first time, should I pick a department? Should I pick a test-cased small group of people from random departments just to see how this goes? What does this look like?
So the best practice would be to do it company-wide, if possible. But again, you know, we have clients in many different industries and locations, and they have different internal structures. So if ideally you can do it company-wide, yes. But if not, and you want to start with a department, then that's okay too.
Okay. And if I am doing this company-wide, is there any reason why my survey questions would be totally different based off of department? Because I'm assuming that if I have an engineering team and a sales team in the same company, I'm assuming that maybe a level of engagement for my sales team might be different for engineering, or they might want to be engaged in different ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. But I think the core things that you're measuring should apply across. But I think that's where, and how we use our Connect tool, we do surveys to, you know, the Pulse surveys to departments specific to things that are going on. And one example I can share is that, you know how much salespeople love it when you change your comp plan, right?
They're thrilled about it.
Exactly. So we had a change that we rolled out. And it was a Friday morning. I think the meeting was like 9:30. And by 10:15, we had an anonymous suggestion about one of the changes to the comp plan. And by 2:00, we were able to adapt and refine that comp plan. There wasn't something that we, you know, was an oversight. And so yes, different departments will have different needs. But the point is, and if you're talking about a person who's just getting started, you have to start building trust by taking those baby steps. So I would say, just start.
Okay. So I've started, I've bought into everything that you're saying, mm-hmm. and I'm ready to go. I've actually implemented the surveys and they seem to be going well. How long do I let this survey go on before I actually start to realize that I have enough data to maybe identify some of the issues that the data is telling me? Is that a month? Could I take one survey? So if we did a Pulse survey in January, can I just take that data, or should I at least look at a quarter's worth of data, or 6 months, wait for a year? What does that look like?
So it depends on what you get back. I would not recommend waiting a year. I would recommend taking action as soon as possible, but still being strategic about it where it's warranted. If there's something that you find out that's something you can change right away, then by all means, you should. But you should take the time to analyze it and be able to report out on it within whatever the expected time frame that you set with your employees. We try to do it very quickly after. I've worked in some organizations that are a little bit larger, and it has to go through a few more layers of approval before you're ready to do that. So I would say that, again, will depend a little bit on the organization, but the point is that you want to do it as soon as possible so that the employees don't feel like, well, you know, I gave all this information and I'm not seeing anything.
So are these surveys both qualitative and quantitative? Meaning, are there a bunch of questions where people are rating, you know, are you happy with your workplace from 1 to 5? But then there are also questions where an employee is being asked, describe to me, how do you feel about the workplace?
So yes, and they are able to provide comments to give a little bit more context. They don't have to, but they are able to provide the comments.
Got it. Okay. So I have these surveys, I'm collecting the data, and it's qualitative, it's quantitative. I'm feeling really good about myself as an HR professional because I am going to have the most engaged workforce possible.
If it was that simple.
you're helping me get to my point. So now I have all this. What do I do? I mean, what do I do? Do I need to now hire someone else to help me figure out what to do with this data? I have some concerns that I want to address, and I feel like some people are happy, some people are not, but I don't really know what to do now that I have this data. What does that typically look like?
So we've spent a lot of time refining our tool and with the use of artificial intelligence to really help that, especially that HR champion, be able to, bubble up to the senior leaders and give them the headlines and create the action plan to be able to share it out to managers within the organization. So it does depend on the organization what that's going to look like. But we've built a lot into the tool to really help with that, because I know that in my experience in the past, where, I've been a part of HR teams that did surveys, it was a little bit exhausting to think about how to roll that out to the organization. And so our goal has been to simplify that process for the champion so that you can start to see a more immediate impact.
Got it. So there seems to be a lot of companies that are not actually performing engagement surveys, which is why I'm assuming why your company exists in the first place.
Yes, absolutely.
So why do you think there are so many companies that are still not measuring engagement?
Well, going back to that engagement journey, we have companies that are what we call lost at sea. And those are companies where it's really kind of a sink or swim mentality. And it's not even a blip on anyone's priority list because they're so focused on everything else they have to do. And then, another stage in that journey is what we call islands of effort. And that's where you'll get people who may be an HR champion or maybe a departmental leader who has seen the value of having engaged employees, and they're working through on their own, what we call islands of effort. But they really don't have leadership support. And so it's not until you really get that leadership support that you can start to see a positive impact. So there could be a number of different reasons that companies don't do it. They might be in denial, or they just simply don't care, or they feel like, I don't know what I would do with all that information if I did go out and survey my employees.
Got it. Are there any other key metrics that would make sense to compare against your engagement metrics? For instance, comparing your turnover year over year to your engagement, or your performance year over year to your engagement. Are there any metrics that really make sense to compare to your engagement metrics?
And that would depend on the organization. There are key relationships that we know from all the research we've done. There are four key relationships that employees have. So how meaningful is the work that they're doing? Does their manager care about them? How do they connect with their team? And how do they connect with the company? And so those are all things that they're going to tie back primarily to, retention. But those are some other things that we do look at.
So I was reading an article the other day that was saying that companies now have the very difficult problem of having to engage 3 to 5 different generations of employees in the same workforce, which I guess has never happened before, which I'm not sure yeah. mathematically how that's possible, but that's a whole other thing. Or maybe it's not that the generations were never there, which I guess they had to be, but it's just the difference between the personalities and technology and everything else with the generation. So have you seen any really awesome ways that companies have done a great job of engaging all the Gen X, the Gen Ys, the millennials? People are constantly talking about millennials every day, and it seems that that audience seems to be the most to engage and for people to wrap their head around. So what are some of the ways that you've seen companies deal with this issue?
I'm going to go back to the catalytic coaching, and it really starts with the individual and getting to know that individual and what matters to them. And once you figure that out and you can do things within your culture that are important to the different people in the workforce. And I think having different types of, whether it's activities or events, things that you do that can help bring people together, whether it's focusing on, how do different departments communicate with each other and doing some teamwork events. Those are different ways that you do it. I don't know that there's, I haven't seen it, one thing that is the magic answer for that. But I think if you, again, just put the employee at the center of it and recognize that they're a person, and approach it from that direction, I think you'll see more success.
I'm assuming that the HR person is typically the point of contact that your company is dealing with to really make this happen inside of a company. But is there a trend, or have you seen otherwise, where there's actually other roles in a company that's now being responsible for engagement, or it's still pretty much HR?
No, it's actually, and again, going back to our engagement journey, the companies that are the most successful are the ones where the leadership really values employee engagement, and it's not just seen as an HR program. As far as a lot of the tactical aspects, we would have that HR person be the contact, as well as, strategic, just depends on the company. But, ideally having senior leadership buy-in is the most important thing. So whether or not they are our contact is less important than the fact that they understand the value of employee engagement.
So another thing that we like to do in this podcast is to talk about how people mess up and how they mm-hmm. do this poorly. So if you're open with this, it would be great for you to share some of the ways that you've potentially done engagement wrong, and or ways that you've seen other companies do it wrong, and how can our listeners take that, internalize it, so that they don't have to start from zero and they can actually get past that. And so, you know what? Thank you for sharing that, because I won't do that. And now I could remove that from my process.
Should have thought about this in advance, because I'm sure I could think of a lot more examples. but I think that, the fact that it is a journey, and it is also going to be different for every organization. So I think that sometimes you try something that you've had success with at one company that doesn't resonate well. And so I would say, as an example, here, when we shared out our quarterly trending results with everyone, we had kind of a Q&A, and it was like crickets. So no one had any questions. Now, they were very comfortable giving a lot of data and feedback throughout the kind of survey process. But I think we should have, or I should have maybe prepped them, or at least maybe had a few people ready to ask questions, because sometimes people don't want to be the one that asks in front of everyone. So I would say that would be one just minor example. So when you have a topic that is, is important as as this. I would say, if you're opening it up to Q&A, my advice would be to plant some question askers in your group.
Even in the workplace, it still goes back to high school. No one wants to raise their hand.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, that's one of the things that I appreciate so much about our products. But I also, you know, I feel like it's my mission is to, I also want to create a culture and environment where people do feel comfortable, you know, verbalizing their questions or concerns in front of other people. I don't want to become solely reliant on the technology. And maybe that's just my age coming through, but it's kind of my personal mission.
Speaking of planning some people in the audience to ask questions and getting employees involved with the whole process, is this survey typically optional for employees to take, or is this typically an employee or company-wide mandate that everyone has to participate in the survey?
Well, that depends on the company and how they roll it out. It should be optional. And, you know, when you, so the one thing that tends to happen in companies where you do have a highly engaged group of people is that they actually look forward to the survey. And that's because you've trained them to know that when they give good feedback, they're going to see great results from it. So again, going back to having to take baby steps to build trust. So the more trust you build when you do the survey and you show them that you've listened to them and that you've taken their feedback and implemented the feedback where you can, then they're going, the next time they're going to be even quicker to respond. So I think when you, if you go out with an iron fist, obviously, you're not going to get the best.
That's interesting. Results. So maybe the new employee engagement survey has nothing to do with the questions. The survey is just to see how many people fill out the survey. And then there you go. That's your engagement. Yeah. And then now you see how many people are engaged.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I think in the, and in the, you know, summit of sustainment, which is kind of, you know, in our employee engagement journey, that's where you've got people who really hold each other accountable to kind of the culture and the mission. And that's when you know that you really do have a really highly engaged team of people working that you're working with. And they're holding each other accountable to that. And it's not top down.
So are there any last words that you would like to say or final words that you would like to say before we go to our next section? In regards to best practices, what people should do, how they should implement this, barriers that they should remove, I mean, anything that you can, wisdom that you can impart on our listeners about measuring employee engagement.
I would just say that no matter where you are or your company is on their journey, just start. And when you ask for feedback, you'll get it. You know, employees will share with you. So just start and don't feel that you have to be able to solve for everything right then. But just starting is going to
well
make
said.
A difference.
So now we're going to go into one of my favorite sections of the podcast, which I call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. We're asking you a real question, a random question, and a ridiculous one. Are you ready?
Okay.
So the real question.
I'm ready.
It's the same real question every time, but it's very real to me. And it's, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I like bread pudding. It's not my dessert of choice. I've actually never made it myself, so I don't know how I like it made. What are the options?
So there is more of a soupy type of bread pudding. There's more of like a French toasted bread pudding. There's brioche. You could have it with ice cream, Irish cream, chocolate syrup.
Probably with ice cream and chocolate syrup.
Ah, okay. I know the perfect place for you. I can tell you after the podcast.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right. The random question.
Okay.
Are you an iPhone or Android person? And if so, why?
iPhone, because I have an iPad and a MacBook, and it just makes life much easier.
Okay. You are Apple all the way.
Everyone in my house except for my husband. So all my kids are Apple, but my husband is holding out with Android.
The last man standing. All right.
Yep.
I appreciate that. And the ridiculous question. What are some of the ridiculous ways that you've either seen or heard companies trying to engage employees?
Ridiculous. Gosh, that's a loaded question, right?
you don't have to name the companies. It's a safe space. You could just talk about it.
I know, right? Through employee recognition programs in companies where no one could really even tell you what the mission or values are, but yet they have employee recognition programs.
Explain, what do you mean about the employee recognition programs?
So I've seen it where it's essentially a popularity contest and people can nominate someone, and all of a sudden you get 25 nominations for one person, and you're like, I think somebody was campaigning. And so it's, it just didn't feel very genuine.
Got it. Okay. So now that we're out of that section, last question of the podcast. What is your favorite and least favorite part of HR?
My favorite part of HR is having variety in what I do, and not knowing what to expect on a day-to-day basis. And my least favorite part of HR is anything that requires a lot of attention to detail.
Got it. Well, Lisa, this was such an awesome and fun interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bruce. This was fun. We should do it again.
We will. So, where can people find you and Energage on the internet?
They can find us at energage.com. They can find me at lisa.sordelia@energage.com, or I happen to be a big fan of LinkedIn. They can find me there.
People find you on Twitter, or no tweeting for you?
I am on Twitter. It's at L Sordelia.
Okay, what about Snapchat?
I only use that for personal.
I was joking.
You can find me on Facebook, but I don't connect because I work in HR. I don't usually connect with people that I work with on Facebook. And I have a kind of unusual hobby, and I'm connected to that. I use Facebook for that. So anyway.
Okay. Not going to ask about that hobby. Just going to skip over that. So. Is Energage hiring?
We are. We have a couple of opportunities here in Exton, PA, on our technology team and our UX design team. And we have we call them recruiters internally, but they're called business development externally. So they are the people who recruit companies to participate in the Top Workplaces program.
Very nice. That's awesome. And we will definitely put all of this information in the show notes.
Thank you.
So, HR listeners out there, thank you so much for checking us out. I'm sure you really enjoyed this episode. Lisa dropped a lot of wisdom on all of you. Also, if you've ever considered an HR dashboard to better track workforce areas like diversity, recruiting, turnover, retention, all that stuff that you like to track every day, please make sure that you check out employeecycle.com and sign up for a demo. If you like this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes and make sure that you download our podcast on your favorite podcast player. And don't forget, continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.